Soul Sister Radio. Radio.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal's Journey to My Father's Palace. Destiny, coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Whoever believes in me will do the same works I have done, and even greater works. This wasn't lip service. Jesus was talking to you. Every Soul Sister Friday at 10 a.m., learn how to claim your God-given dominion to follow the Master's example and restore health, demonstrate supply, harmonize relationships, and have victory over sin with Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson, spiritual solutions to life's challenges.
Welcome to 4 International Soul Sister Radio. I am your producer, Maria DiGiovanni, welcoming you to the Soul Sister Experience. First, a special thank you to our station sponsor, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, who make it possible to record live and broadcast worldwide. We invite you to get ready to enjoy the show. Take it away, my soul sister.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Safety First is Murphy's Law. This is Tracy, and I'm joined with my super awesome special guest, Leela Albert, and co-host Star Myers. Star, are you here? Star? I guess not. Okay, so Leela is our special guest today. Hi, Leela.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Welcome to our show.
I'm so glad to be here.
I am too. I've been reading your story, learning about what you've gone through through this journey, and you're just a real inspiration to all.
Well, I thank you for that.
My gosh, you know, and then I see that you just recently got your BA in criminal justice.
Yes, I did, from the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, with a happy to say with a 3.27 average. So I worked really hard to maintain good grades.
Oh my gosh,
that is a challenge. Oh. There, yes.
Hey, Star.
Hi. I was
we
here.
We were looking for you earlier.
I was on mute on accident.
Well, you know what? Thank you for inviting Leela to join us. I've been learning so much about her, and I can't wait to hear from you, Leela, and hear your story. Leela is an advocate, activist. She's a published poet and a writer, and just got her BA in criminal justice. She works in a shelter, working with survivors 12 to 17 years old. She's the founder of Restoring His People Ministry, combating abuses against men, women, and children, along with her devotional teaching at Facebook. So Leela, from New Jersey, now 15 years divorced from her ex-husband, she has two adult children and thriving. So welcome, Leela.
Well, I'm just, like I said before, I'm so blessed to be here, and I'm just blessed to have the opportunity to share my domestic violence story as well as some insights that I learned over the years.
Well, we can't wait to hear. You know, how did this start? It sounds like you had an awakening. So you were going through the abuse for so long until finally you said enough.
The background of this spiritual awakening that I had was due to the fact that I had some female issues, which required female surgery.
Okay.
And I had decided that once the surgery was over, I would go to my mom's house and recover there, taking the two children, because they were much younger than at that time, because this was back in 1997. So that's going back a little bit.
Okay.
Well, while I was at my mother's recovering from the surgery, I was also in a state of, for the first time in a long time, living abuse-free. I wasn't being abused in that house. People were loving and respecting me, far from what I was getting with my children, too, when I was in the marital home with my then-husband. And I say Dan because I'm very public about sharing. Some women don't feel comfortable, but I have no problems because everything that I share with you is based on the divorce, which is public record in the family court, and also the incidents of domestic violence was documented with the local police. So anything I'm sharing is public knowledge, so I don't walk in any kind of fear or retaliate. I mean, he does get upset if he happens to listen to shows like this, but he doesn't control me anymore. He has no power over me.
So what kind of journey was that with him? When you married him, were you young and he, what was he like?
Well, I felt really like going back to the beginning, because often when I share my story, I share midway into it, and I share the last couple years of my life, but I really felt like
however you want.
Thank you. I'll go back to the beginning when I met him.
Okay.
And that's usually, I mean, in order to get married, you obviously have to meet somebody.
Right.
And you start a relationship with that person, and then you start, hopefully a friendship, and then you start a relationship. Then you fall in love, and then you commit to this person, you get engaged to the person, and you get married. Well,
right.
When I first met him, he was handsome, funny, cute, charming, nice,
mm-hmm.
Christian man, you know, the whole package. He was serving the Lord. He just seemed like, you know, this good, awesome Christian man, and why wouldn't I want to date him, you know? So
exactly.
We started a
wow.
dating relationship, and of course, there was all kinds of little signs that came up during the dating part, but as I would say, I was in love, and I just let love make excuses
cool.
for his behavior.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And just little things started to add up, and then when we were planning the marriage, he was making more money than me, and he was living with his mother at home, and I was living
mm-hmm.
at home with my mother. And I had this goal and budget for a wedding, but he was spending his money, and he was making excuses where it was going. And I was, like, footing all the bills for the wedding, but then he started to do his part. But they were all warning signs that he could not
mm-hmm.
handle money. But, of course, I was in love.
Right.
So I made excuses for his behavior. 3 days before the actual ceremony took place, he lashed out with major anger issues with one of his supervisors and walked off the job. Red flag. Yes, red flag warning.
Well,
but
yes,
I didn't.
But you didn't see it or listen to it.
Well, I saw it to a degree, and I told him, this is the deal, Dan. You go back and apologize to your supervisor to make sure that you have a job or we don't get married.
Oh.
Well, that was probably
Sounds like you were strong then. You know, you have an internal strength in there.
Well, I was, but it flandered after a while. So
right.
He went back, got everything straight. We got married, but even on the day I got married, I was feeling uneasy from what happened 3 days before. And I remember my father, as I was getting out of the car, he said, "You know, Leela, you don't have to get married today." And I'm like, you know what, Dad, you're right. Because my dad and I'm not super close with my dad even today. I'm not really close to my dad. He's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
He's 89. But anyway, I just had this funny feeling. But I said, no, I love this man. I commit to this man, the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever. But I still had something wasn't right in my spirit. But anyway, I got married, was happy. Went on a honeymoon, started this, you know, fabulous relationship, this wonderful Christian man, but things were not adding up with the finances. I was able to save a lot of money because we wanted to put a nice down payment on a house. But then 2 years within the marriage, he was extremely jealous with one of my girlfriends that I hadn't had for years. And he didn't want her to come down. And I was waking up out of bed one morning, and I hear this popping sound. And I get up, and he comes in with his fist saying, "I don't want blank to be here anymore, and I don't want her to come down, and I'm going to hurt you." And he's throwing his fist at me. And all of a sudden,
oh,
I just put the covers over my head, and I said, "Lord, what in the H-E-double-L did I get myself into?" And from that moment on, I lived in constant fear of him. I was intimidated by him, and I started losing myself. And the boundaries definitely went out the window.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes, and then it was like, well, let's go for Christian counseling and all this. And, you know, looking back in hindsight, it was just a big forest. You know, I was willing to change. I was willing to work on the marriage even back then, but he was in denial that he only had this anger issue. Well, over time, the anger just got worse and worse, as even before the children came, and our first child
came.
In
that process, you know, I was hearing so much strength. You know, you stood up and said, "Look, we're going to do this. You know, you're going to go apologize before we get married." And then it sounds like through time, like for instance, that situation where you pulled the sheets up over your head, that was one little, you know, breakdown, and then another one, and another one, and to the point, like you said, You lost who you were, living in all that fear.
Exactly. Living in fear. I couldn't even describe what kind of fear I was living in because I had never really experienced this before. And I thought I had married this one person, but now they're showing their true self within the first 2 years of marriage. So I was like flabbergasted. Of course I didn't tell anybody. Of course I kept it to myself.
Right.
Because nobody would believe him because he's handsome, he's charming, he was social, he was doing things in the church, everybody liked him. They wouldn't believe me.
Even if
I told them, they wouldn't believe me. So I kept it to myself for a long, long time. But my mom's
and
perceptive.
Very painful.
Well, my mom's perceptive. She kind of figured out something was wrong, and I started telling her little things. And she, of course, she wasn't happy, and I won't get into her reaction, but, you know, she would give me her motherly advice, which I would expect, you know, when your child, even your adult children, they may not make wise decisions, but being a mother, you still may give an opinion to the situation at hand.
Right. Although you may not want to hear the opinion.
Right. But you still, but I listened to her. I may not have followed through with it, but at least I gave her the courtesy and respect and listened to what she had to say to me at that time.
That's excellent. And
it continued in. With her in particular, it continued in because she was very opinionated, and I can understand her opinionated opinions. At that time, maybe I didn't always appreciate them, but then after the fact and then after the divorce, and there was a time when my mom and I actually sat down and we discussed a lot of the things that had gone wrong, and I made my amends with my mother for not listening to her, not believing her, being nasty to her, or maybe sarcastic to her, because, you know, abusers, he was trying to sever me from family ties as well.
That's right, and your mom could see that.
Right, so at least she had enough common sense and alert that something was wrong, and she was one of my biggest supporters during the divorce.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love to hear that.
And that doesn't always happen.
No. So when you finally made this decision for the divorce, she had encouraged you by voicing her opinion along the way, but finally it was your own choice.
Right. The uniqueness of being in her house after surgery, having an opportunity when the children were in school, because obviously I was recovering from surgery, so I wasn't able to work, so I was out of work for 6 weeks. Her and I had some really serious conversations about, you know, what was I going to do, you know, I told her, I said, I can't deal with his abuse anymore. You know, I just flooded out all this stuff that had gone on for years and years and years. And this was November. This was in November of 1997. I had the surgery on Veterans Day on the 11th. On the 19th of November of that year, I called Dan up, told him that things just weren't going the way they should. We had previously, for the past year and a half, been in all forms of counseling, did all kinds of stuff in the church, went to Christian counseling, went to some secular, you know, agency counseling. It was all good. It was all pointing in the right direction, everything. But he wasn't working on it. He wasn't doing his part. I was sitting there hours and hours doing my stuff and, you know, making appointments. And sometimes I would go to counseling all by myself. Whatever it took to make this marriage work, I was, like, in it 1,000%. But he wasn't even there for 2% of it. So with the conversation that I was having with my mother, I called him up on the 19th and told him that, you know, this is what we've done, this isn't working, and I'm legally separating from you because in the state of New Jersey, there's no paperwork. Once two spouses are living in separate residence, you are legally separated in the state of New Jersey. And that's what I did.
Interesting. So, and you knew that at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Clever,
it was
clever.
Like revelation just came. I mean, people are trying to tell me for years, you know, he's doing this, he's doing that. He was having emotional affairs with women in the church, and people were coming up to me and saying things to me about it. He had started to physically abused the children when they were young, mm-hmm. toddlers all the way up until the time we got divorced. There was instances of him destroying stuff in the house. He took part of my daughter's wall out in her room into the hallway, and I had to call the police. But living in fear, I should have filed, and this is a regret, and I want listeners to know that sometimes when we're under pressure, we don't always make healthy decisions for ourselves, and I didn't. But I don't want others to make the same choices that I made, but I did not file for a restraining order at that time. I wanted to work on the marriage, and this was like this was in February of 1996. This was like not even, this was about, it was about a year and a half before I actually filed for a divorce. He just was so violent, and he threatened to harm me. Like, there was some physical abuse with me, but most of it was financial abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, and severe verbal abuse.
Now, when you say financial abuse, you know, that's a great part of abuse
yes.
that I would love to explain to our listeners, because I think oftentimes people don't understand what that control is, what that means. Can you share a little bit about that financial abuse that you experienced so other people could understand what that means?
Sure. With us, in the beginning of the marriage, I was the finance person. I paid all the bills. I seemed to be better at math, and I had a better budget going.
Mm-hmm.
But then, before we had our first child, which was 4 years into the marriage, Dan had convinced me that, oh, I think I'm the man of the house, you know, I need to take control of the spending and the finances. And I said, okay, I'm willing to do that. I had been doing it for like 3 years in the marriage, the first 3 years,
mm-hmm.
so I did. And that's when I really mm-hmm. saw some financial issues, like I couldn't touch the checkbook, I couldn't know what the balance of the checkbook was, I couldn't know how much he was putting in savings. I had been working myself. I was putting our money into a joint account, and I was taking out money for me to, like, live on, getting some clothes, and I was a Christian, so being a Christian, I tithe my church.
Uh-huh.
But here's all my money, and then some of my money would go in the checking account of my earnings, and some would go in the savings account, and I was, like, really trying to be frugal with my money
mm-hmm.
and be a good steward of my money. But, like, when he controlled all the bills and all this, and I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that, and then when we got credit cards, he was very controlling with the credit cards. He didn't want me to know his transactions. He did not want me to know how much he was putting on the credit cards.
Huh.
And, you know, even though I tried to find the credit cards or the checkbook, you know, he was real keen about hiding them from me. Because I am an inquisitive child, I would try to, you know, fight for myself to some
right.
degree. But that's what
right.
that's to me is financial abuse.
Right. The absolute control over the finances, not being allowed to know where you stand financially in your relationship or whether or not you're going to be able to spend on your own free will.
Now, another form of the financial, and I'm wondering if you had this as well, is the guilt and manipulation when you do spend it or when you do ask for it. There's usually the recourse and the verbal abuse that you get. Did you have that as well?
There were many incidents, and I can't really think of any particular incident offhand. But when I'd asked about the finances, he says, oh, don't you trust me? You don't trust me. Your wife trusts her husband. And then he would go into, like, a religious spiel with me.
Oh,
yes. I know he spiritually, that's where the spiritual, I forgot to say, the spiritual abuse, misquoting God's word and using it against me.
Ooh,
and
wow.
misquoting it and using it for his own selfish
personal,
gain.
Yeah.
Right, his personal gain, his selfish gain. He never used the scriptures as the scriptures are to be interpreted by the Lord when it comes to marriage, because I don't want to get into preaching or teaching, but there is a mutual submission. The Bible's very clear on marriage of how a woman is supposed to submit to her husband, but a husband is supposed to honor and submit to his wife as well. So there is a dual responsibility there. It's not one-sided.
No,
That's right. And I think I've heard that misused in the past as well. And I'm really glad you just cleared that up right there, because it is true. And it does say it right there that it is an equal balance.
Yes, you know, it's not just that the wife submits. It's that, yeah.
And I have experienced myself those kind of issues where things were twisted in that way to then make me believe what they're telling me, which then causes all these other insecurities and false beliefs within ourselves.
Right. I would question the Bible, and I'm really like questioning God. Does your word really say that? You know, and then you'd go back myself and redo the scripture and get like a Bible study, because I had like different Bible studies I would do, and I had different notes and stuff. And, you know, I was like, well, that doesn't line up with God's word. And then when you confront him again, you get this barrage of verbal abuse. You're misquoting the scriptures. You're not trusting in me. And then, you know, you get tired of hearing the lecture after lecture after lecture.
Right.
You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You know.
Ugh. Boy, that must have been a brutal, brutal experience of just battering continuously. So when, you know, I have to say that the dangers when you do realize that you're in a violent relationship that is possibly life threatening, and you need to get away and know inside you need to get away, that's the most dangerous time, and especially when you let the abuser know that you're going to leave them. So in a way, you know, you were in that perfect opportunity, being in your mom's house, to then break away. Where, you know, I think that God is definitely looking out for you right there, because not very many people have that opportunity or know how to get away, and that's just really powerful that you were able to find that safe place, not maybe even being aware at the time, but you were guided into that safe place. Sadly, you know, there was the misfortune of the medical issues that you were experiencing. But at the same time, it seemed to have brought you so much closer to that enlightenment that you were so desiring.
Yes, that's why I think my story, I mean, all our stories are unique, but that's where mine's super unique, because a lot of times you're still physically there in a resonance together, in a relationship together, and you're like, how am I going to leave? Well, I was already out of the residence. I had already had the children with me.
Wow.
So they weren't
wow.
in danger, because they were at, you know, but I was still in danger, because
yeah.
they knew where my mom was, and
mm-hmm.
my parents
mm-hmm.
really didn't like him at that point. And he really, honestly, it was their house. So God protected me by them putting up boundaries and telling him he was not welcome at their house. And they had that
oh,
legal right, you know, so they did. They told him. You know, he started harassing me on the phone, calling me, I love you, let's go. So I went to the pastor, and I told the pastor how I felt that, you know, I did everything, you know, all my ducks in a row. I did all this counseling, and you saw me here, you saw how I made myself accountable to God and the church for trying to save this marriage, but you see also what Dan's done and what he didn't do and everything. And
mm-hmm.
I basically told him there. I had a couple counseling sessions, and the last one I was like, well, you know, I'm leading towards divorce. And he says, well, but see, the pastors at the church at the time were very ignorant. They did not know how to counsel people in domestic violence, and that's a sad part
mm-hmm.
of the church. A total different story of itself. But when I did decide to do it, I had been, you know, seeking God, and I started going to another church, because it was impossible to go to the same church with him
mm-hmm.
being the way he was. And the pastor,
right.
the church that I ended up going to, their pastor had trained himself in domestic violence, because his church had personally was dealing with that, with one of their members was killed, her abuser had killed her. So they're really
uh-huh.
sensitive to domestic. So God sent me to the right church, because I felt safe haven there at that particular church.
Now, were you aware of this before you went there?
No, I had no idea. A friend of mine who knew of my situation says, well, why don't you come to my church? But she didn't say to me at that time that her pastor was a supporter of victims of domestic violence. I had no idea.
Oh, my gosh.
When I got there, I got a real blessing of it. Pastor Steve, he just was so wonderful. And I did a lot of counseling with him, and he was very supportive when I went through. I actually, see, this all, I separated in November of 97, went and saw a lawyer right after Christmas of 97, and we did the actual divorce papers the middle of January of 98, and he was served. But before he was served, I had taken four of my female friends in cars, and I went over to get a lot of my other personal stuff, because when I came to my mother, I only brought enough for staying at her house for about 6 weeks. I had some clothes, and I knew I could go back after I could drive and get some more clothes if I needed it, and I was going to go back to work, and had all these other things planned. But when I decided to divorce him, then the whole scenario obviously changed. So we went, and I took a lot of stuff out of my house. I took the birth certificates. I took the deed of the house. I took all these things because the girls knew I was divorcing him. So they were coaching me on what I should be taking. So they became a proactive safety plan and making sure that if I could find any money in the house, anything that I could use for me and my kids. We emptied out drawers. We emptied out all the clothes. We even went in the kitchen and took stuff that I could take, but the house was in shambles. So the house was very unkept.
Tell me this.
Hmm?
Now
okay, ladies.
Yes.
It is about that time. I want to take a break and go to commercials. Yes.
Okay, so when we come back,
we want to hear more about when she went in. Yeah.
Okay.
The house
right.
stuff. Yes.
Okay.
So we
thank
will go
you.
To commercial now.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Soul Sister Radio.
Tracy?
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Now a message from our sponsor, EducateEtiquette.com. Have you ever been at a table with a group of people and there is one person being rude on their cell phone? Have you mentioned it to that person and they still do it as if they just don't care as much for those around them in the flesh as they do for their own personal thread on Facebook? It's even worse when you're around our older generation who really have a hard time understanding how people can form relationships this way. There is wisdom in their thinking, so please don't be rude. Put it away in respect. Yourself, most of all. Thank you for joining us on Soul Sister Enterprise, and please visit us at www.educateetiquette.com.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Welcome back, and I want to take this chance to thank our sponsors, BrainBiz, Imagine Publicity, Voice and Amplified, and a big thank you to our station sponsors, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, 4 International, Spa Gyms, B&B Builders and Remodeling, and it was Tammy Arnum who sang our song today, so I just want to put out a big thank you to her today because our song in
beautiful
the beginning was
song.
And now back to Lila. We want to hear more about when you went into the house
And how did you arrange that where nobody was there? Was that prearranged?
I knew what Dan's work schedule was, and I had gotten on the phone with my little support team because we were a support team already established through some other support groups that I physically would attend in the local community. And we planned it. It was no problem because every single woman that helped me had been a previous victim of domestic violence.
So
they all came to
That's
my
nice.
Aid with their cars. And like I said, I removed everything that I needed to remove, personal items only, because I knew with a divorce that there was equal distribution in the state of New Jersey that I couldn't remove certain items. So I only took our personal items because I wanted to do things by the book and not get in trouble with the lawyers or the courts or whatever.
Right, very smart.
When he went into the house, I'm sure blank hit the fan, and, you know, he obviously knew how serious I was about getting a divorce.
Right, like you said, the house was in shambles.
He had left it in shambles. So going in there with my friends, it was like, it was an embarrassment because it was my home, even though I wasn't responsible for taking care of it. He was, because he was living in it. But
right.
We took pictures and everything because there was mold in the refrigerator. There was mold on uncooked food that he left on the refrigerator. But what I want to go, when I get finished with this, I have to go back a little bit with his background to explain why the house is in shambles.
Okay.
It had something to do with the abuse, but it also had to do with his mental health issues. But I got everything out, and I was with a lawyer. I already retained him, and he was writing up the paperwork, so he was telling me what to do, because every time I did something, I called him to make sure that I was doing it legally, because I didn't want to get in trouble and have anything come back and bite me during the divorce.
Right.
And so one afternoon, like a week and a half after he was served divorce papers, I knew he was at work, and the children, we got done, they got finished with school, and they wanted some more of their toys because I could only take so much to my mom's house because she's already got an established house. And I went to get my keys out to change, you know, to do the door, and the locks had been changed. He had changed the locks on the house, and I was obviously not able to access my house. And after several months of court, I finally took him to civil court. It's different than family court because it's civil court and involved the property of the marital, even though we were going through a divorce and all that. But I got access. I got the new key, and the judge had ringed them out from one end to the other. You have no right because my name is on that house, so I legally own that house. And nobody has a right to deny me access to my house.
That's right.
That's
right. But what a feeling to go and put that key in the lock and
I said, okay, you want to play dirty? You know, like every time he did something and played dirty with me, I did two things. I called a lawyer, make police reports, and said, no, I'm going to court because that's where my battleground is. It's in the court. The judge needs to know what he's doing to me. If I don't document it with the courts or the police, who's going to believe me?
Nothing. That's right.
Right. So I also have a label. I call myself the documentation queen. I like to document everything and make sure that, you know, all parties above know exactly what's going on. But I'm going to skip back. In May of 1997, Dan had a mental health breakdown. He had been diagnosed a year before that with bipolar, and he was on meds. And, you know, I don't begrudge, and I support mental health awareness and people with illness. But if you're abusive too, you know, and then after a while he stops taking his medicine, he stopped going to therapy. It was very difficult to deal with because he was having his ups and downs, his mood swings and all that. And it was on top of the domestic violence, you're dealing with an out of control mentally ill person. You know,
That's right.
Can imagine how chaotic my house. I lived in total chaos for the last year and a half of my marriage.
I can imagine.
It was police coming to the house. He went through PIP, that is the emergency, you know, mental health agency at the hospital. He was he voluntarily put himself into a voluntary mental health unit, the hospital, for a week. He got intense counseling after, but nothing worked because he took himself off the medicine again, and he was erratic and with his with his behaviors, and he was on and off his medicine. He wouldn't listen to the counseling. I mean, when I say I did everything possible to get this man back on his feet, I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in
right.
the meantime, I have two children who are suffering because
right.
I'm the only stable one in the house at that time. But with getting the divorce,
okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. I have to cough. Hold on. Go ahead. You can go ahead.
Oh, no, that's all right. Go for it. I actually just lost my train of thought.
During the time that I had to go for the court action to get the key back, and he was going to have supervised visitations because the courts, during upon the pending divorce and the filing of the divorce, I should say, I received sole legal custody of my children in the state of New Jersey. He was found to be an unfit parent because
right.
he wasn't so much that you can have a mental illness and still have custody of your children, but when you stop taking your medicine and when you stop treatment, then you become
right.
an unfit parent. And plus,
that's right.
he abused both of our children. So that was two strikes against him. So he
right.
was still fighting me with custody at the final divorce, and the visitations went very bad because they were supervised and it was private. It was not through any agencies or anything, because when I got a divorce, I did everything through the family court. I did not charge him with domestic violence. He did not get charged criminally with child abuse because it all went through the family court. I didn't take
it
to
the legal. You know, it sounds like you also had a successful experience with the family court, where so many people have not had such successful experiences. How were you doing through that process? You know, that had to have felt empowering when you got the sole custody and the courts actually saw the truth and awarded you custody and all of that. You know,
it was extremely empowering because I had heard horror stories about how children are given to their abusers. I mean, I know
right.
what goes on today in the family court system is really broken, but that's also another story. But in my case, they believed me, like the documentations and the presiding judge. She was an advocate of combating abuses against children, and she had a strong opinionated judge, and she took me at my word of all these incidences, and you know, I just felt like, wow, that was like a big burden taken off of my shoulders, knowing that I could control what was going on with my kids. I could make the decisions without conferring with him.
Right.
And then when it came to supervised visitations, we had to have a list of people that he could use. We had to mutually decide who we could trust for those individuals needed to know the children. The children needed to know them. And there had to be an established trust with the relationship between them and the supervisor. And they were done in my home. But before that could even be taking place, we had to really straighten up some stuff. And the house had to be straightened up, so I brought that up, and I had a court order, and this is so sick, but there was a court order for him to clean the house up and have it safe for the children. Is that sick or what?
That's really
a court
sad.
Order to clean your house because it was so messed up, and I
Unlivable.
Had showed pictures and everything to the judge, and if it wasn't
well, good
clean,
for you.
If
good
it wasn't
for you.
Clean, thank you. So if the house wasn't clean to my liking, I could stop the visitations until he cleaned it, and then I could take him back to court to prove to the judge,
wow.
that, you know, like I would have taken pictures. But for some odd reason, he decided that he would clean the house up, and it was a lot cleaner. I wouldn't say perfectly clean, but it was clean enough for the children. There was no more moldy food. I mean, there was mold in the refrigerator. There was mold in uncooked food. On the stove, There was mold in the microwave.
Oh, boy.
There was papers and papers, stuff scattered all over the house, from one end of the house to the other, on the floor, on the furniture, on the tables. There was food out that wasn't put away. You know, the house looked horrible. And he cleaned it up, and then the kids could start visitations, but he wasn't consistent with them. And see, this is where I lost my boundary sometimes, because I felt bad for him because of all the emotional stuff that a victim of domestic violence goes through. There's all these codependent issues that victims can deal with. I mean, at least I know with me, I was very codependent with him. I was always trying to fix him and all that, so I felt sorry for him. So sometimes I did a supervised visitation. I would encourage any of your listeners, never do that. Never, ever do that.
Right.
Go by your strict court order. Go by every single word. It will cause you less grief.
That's right. But that's, too, you know, really, I think, a very common thing for people, like you did. You know, you are codependent. When you've been battered for so long, that's all you know is how to try to please that other person. But then it sounds like you had so much support with the people from the church.
Not so much the church. I was involved in some other outside support groups. The people in the church were very supportive. There was only like a select few people that really understood domestic violence in the particular church. But it was the other people that I knew from other churches and from other support groups that I was involved in the community who came to my aid. They helped me financially and everything, because when I was getting the divorce, I was not working. So I was looking for work and still recovering from female surgery. So I'm getting a divorce, recovering from female surgery, and I'm looking for work. Three major things. One would have been enough, but I had three. And then I had children who were unstable, and I had to get them into counseling. I got myself into counseling, and in the middle of all this, I got myself into counseling with a domestic violence counselor at my local women's center, and I got my children in counseling.
Oh, that was probably the smartest thing right there.
I did a lot in such a short period of time.
Wow. How old are your children now? You know, this was quite a while ago. So they're adults now?
Yes. My son is 23 and my daughter's 27.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
I'm proud to say that I'm 59.
Oh, my gosh. That's beautiful. Your whole family, you sound like you guys are just... You're really doing some amazing stuff, and your family, it sounds healthy, and you're away from the abuse. You've been away from the abuse now for how long?
Well, the last court hearing for child support, and that went on for like 2 years, because he was saying false allegations about the child support against my son, saying he wasn't in high school anymore, he wasn't in college, you know, all these false things. You know, abusers like to control you through the family court.
That's right.
Because they'll take
you
to family court for unfounded issues just to get, you know, try to intimidate you.
Right.
So the final court hearing was May of 2010, and I had owed him some money. I had overpaid because he was not taking me back. He was complaining he had to pay child support when our son was still in high school. And it was a fact. And I had to prove, I had to go to school and get records and letters from the school to take court to prove. I had to do all that, take out of my time. I'm working, you know, I'm moving on in my life. 2010, I had been divorced for 12 years. This was still going on 12 years after the divorce.
Right.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Now, we have a question in the chat room. Someone wants to know, do you still love him now, and did you still love him when you left?
Ooh. Good question.
That's good. That's a good question, though. And I think it's a very justifiable question. Do I love him now? No, I don't love him. But in the beginning of the divorce, there was so much hate and love mixed up inside me that through counseling and different things that I worked on myself during divorce and years after the divorce, my love for him diminished. And today, I do not hate him. I do not love him. I have undetermined feelings for him. That's the best way I can describe it. It's undetermined feelings. I don't hate him. I think he's a lost soul. He needs professional help. 2 years after the divorce, in the midst of all this, he gets married. 4 months after he gets married, he tells our children. So there's a lot of dysfunction going on. And then that's when the supervised visitation went to unsupervised, because I figured the children were older then, and a bit older then, and that they could they'd be around another person. I did not know this person. I had never, it wasn't a local person. She was from a different part of New Jersey. And I had a lot of concerns because of his domestic violence background, his getting remarried. So the chaos of him telling her that I was lying, that he never abused me. I had to go through all that years after I found out he was married. I had more issues. I had to go to court to try to tell, I had to tell the judge, like, you know, he's harassing me. She's interfering with the court orders. You know, she was controlling too. But what I want to say to your listeners is, when you leave an abuser, when you finally decide to divorce your abuser, this is something every man or woman, because men get abused too in domestic violence. Whatever you do when it has children arise, please, if it's a girlfriend, a boyfriend, a new spouse, do a background check on them, please, because your children's safety is at risk here.
That's
you
right.
already have a domestic violence abuser, the parent. The parent, in my case, abused the children. He was found to be unfit. So do you think he's going to marry somebody really good and mature and stable? We don't know. He married this woman. And I kept saying to the lawyer, I want to do a background check. I don't know who she is. We've just been through all these things all these years, and now he's remarried, and on visitations, they're going to be with her. Oh, no, 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 don't worry about it. She's probably good. You know, and, you know, I'm, like, not putting boundaries up, but I'm not adhering to really what I'm saying. I just kind of like, okay, well, I hope she's not bad. Well, I had a lot of issues going on after he failed to do a lot of different things in the court order. So I spent a total between the time I got the divorce until the last time I saw him in May of 2010, I spent about 12, 13 years post-divorce in family court.
Unbelievable.
All because of him. All because of him failing to follow court orders and failing to provide for the children. At this point, I don't care about me. This is where the advocacy, this is where the advocate in me developed, by advocating for my own children in family court, advocating for their needs to be met, because that was their father.
Yeah.
And I was at a point now where the divorce and the court orders that I could legally reinforce.
Right.
So I took advantage of my parental responsibility to my children. I did my part. I didn't have to have a court order saying that I had to have insurance. You know, he was the one that was supposed to provide it, because this was all based on the divorce settlement.
Right.
Now, we have another question in the chat room. They want to know if there was any anger in the kids when they started dating.
My children, that's another great question, actually. They were very angry for years. They were angry against me for divorcing their father. But through therapy and taking responsibility for their own feelings, opinions, and actions, they've had to work on it. They're still a work in progress, even in their 20s. But they've come a long ways. And if they have any kind of anger, it is towards their father right now, not me, because they saw who I was. I was real with them. Anything that I did wrong with them in the marriage and after, I took the time to apologize and make amends to my children. And I don't want to cry, but it's heavy-duty stuff. When you're healing and you're restoring yourself, you have to look at yourself as a parent and say, what was my role in all this? What do I need to change? What do I need to take responsibility for? They're survivors. We're a family of three. We're not perfect. We all have our quirks and screws, as I say it. We have our things that we have to deal with. But we're happy. We're abuse-free.
Yes. And
we're
that's
working
that's,
on each other. We're working on it.
That's where we all wish to be.
We are down to 4 minutes, so I want you to take this time and say one last thing to the audience before we close out.
This show went by, this is the fastest show we've ever done.
It always goes by fast. If you could say one last thing to them, what would you say, aside of what you've said in the past? Anything else?
Strong boundaries. Learn to place boundaries. Learn boundaries right away in the beginning. If you're going to separate, get yourself into counseling. Get yourself a support system in place like I did. That's the best advice I can say. Be true to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Love yourself. Take care of yourself. Even if you don't know how, seek advice. Do little baby steps if you have to. Deal with life one day at a time and one issue at a time. That's my advice to your listeners.
Awesome.
Beautiful advice.
And I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. And it went by so fast, as always. But it was an incredible show, and your story is awesome. I am so proud to have you as a friend and know you.
It's been a real blessing to be here. It's been a blessing to share my life, and I know that at least one person has been affected by what I shared today. I also want to thank you for having Soul Sister Radio and everything that you do. It is awesome. It is awesome for what you ladies do.
Well, thank you. We try, and it's stories like yours that helps everybody else out there that don't know how to get out or are living in that fear, because there is hope. And
there is always
hope. Yes, and your story is all about the hope, that you never lost your hope, and you kept searching, and you never gave up. And now here you are today, a college graduate with a degree in criminal justice. And
right.
maybe one day you come back on our show and share a little bit more.
I would love to anytime.
That would be really great.
And right now I'm getting ready to go. Well, actually, I start in a few weeks in the shelter working with juveniles in need.
That's the best thing I think we could do. That's where the help really needs to go, the support. And so many of us are brought up in these broken homes, dysfunctional homes, and they don't know how to have the coping skills or know how to function in relationships with healthy boundaries. So, you know, my hat's off to you for that.
Well, I thank you. I want to be a role model. That's all I want to be.
I've worked
with children and families for about 35 years now. And I just want to be there for them, help them, love them. You're not alone. I always say you're not alone. You always have someone around to care for you, whether you know it or not. And I'm one of them. I'm like the big supporter, the cheermeister.
People want to find you, Leah. Where can they find you?
I have a page called Restoring His People's Ministry on Facebook. All I have to do is punch it into search. You can also punch in Leila Albert, the name, and it will come up to a professional page, where you'll find my advocacy work, postings of writings I do, different projects I'm involved in. I have another page on Facebook called Advocate for Families. I usually post resources there. So you just find me on Facebook. When you punch in Leila Albert, everything will come up on your search.
Great.
The thing drops down, and you can find me there. You can connect with me there.
Well, I have a feeling you'll be hearing from quite a few people. Your story is powerful.
I appreciate you allowing me to come on tonight and to share. I have truly been blessed.
We have to close out, ladies. Thank you so much for joining Safety First with Murphy's Law with Tracy and Star. And speak to our guest, Leila. We will see you next week, Tracy, or on Safety First. Tracy, thank you so much for choosing Soul Sister Radio. We will see you next week.
Thank you, everybody.
Sister Radio.
How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I was blind, but now I see.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sista Enterprise, the Law Office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.
Soul Sista Radio.